Mr. Drake, relate.
So we're talking about Private Mawson.
Well, Private Mawson absconded again because they put him on a job he didn't like. And of course, as soon as he gets home, he does a civilian job again and lands up in jail. So one night, it was Friday night, CSM Gates came up to me and says, you live in Yorkshire, don't you? I says, oh, yeah, I am a Yorkshireman. He says, well, will you go on this escort? I says, escort won't follow. He says, Private Mawson, who? I says, not him. He says, yes. I says, all right. He says, I said, I'll go fetch him back. But he's in Armley Jail. You pick him up at 9 o'clock Monday morning. So I says, right, I says, get who you want to go with you. So I looked round in Kelly's and lived at Geisley, which was close to the jail anyway. So I said to this lad, I says, do you want to go home for a weekend and see your missus? He says, can I? I says, well, I says, if you go on an escort job with me, I says, I'm going to fetch back Mawson again. I says, from Armley Jail. I says, we'll get all those papers and we can go Friday night. So Friday night we're on the train and with this wild they call it, this lad, and off we went up to where he went straight home to Geisley. I went straight home to Emsworth, and I says, I'll meet you outside the jail at 9:15. So I says, you make sure and be there. I says, that's going to be trouble. So, well, he said, I'll be there, Sergeant, I'll be there. So I met up with him on Monday morning. We'd had a weekend at home, that all that pinch, you see, on the way. So, but it was all right, because we had to pick him up until 9 o'clock, so we weren't doing anything untoward. Oh, I met him at 9:15, he was there when I arrived at Armley Jail. And went in through the big doors and up to the officers, and of course you have to sign for them. So the festival brought him into office, and Private Wilde, lovely girl, stood behind me, and I signed for him. While I'm signing for him, they're taking him out. And I was going to handcuff him before I left the office, but he'd already got out. And when they were walking up towards the big doors, because they opened the doors, and I'm doing a catch up because we'd be waiting signing for him. They brought him up straight out and were walking him out while I was signing. So that's a little catch up job. Anyway, I caught up just as we were going through the main doors. So I looked at Wilde and gave him an order, and so much to say, watch him, keep each side of him. Anyway, we just walked down to the bottom of the street where the entrance to the jail was. There's a little corner shop. He shot behind us and into this corner shop. Oh, I thought to myself, I'm going to have some bloody trouble here with this fella. And I want to get the handcuffs on him. And there's no way he's going to let me do it in the bloody street. He's going to cause a bit of commotion. So I thought I'd play it cool. So he comes to us. I says, hey, you, Boston. I says, don't you ever do that again. You don't leave us two unless I tell you. So I says, watch what you step. So I says, what we're going to do, I said, we're going to get on a tram into the city centre where the main station was. I said, and then I said, I don't know what time this train goes. I was telling lies, I did. But I said, I don't know what time this train goes, but I'll get to know what time was the train. So he says, well, is there any chance of nipping home? I says, well, it depends on the time of train. I says, we'll see what time the train is. I said, and then we'll see about that. Says, if there's any chance, yes, I'll play up to him. I know I have to. So we went to other side of the road, to left hand side of the road, and caught the first tram, got on the tram, and got off the tram, and of course, we had to cross the road then to get to the station. It stopped outside the station, but we were on the wrong side of the road, so we stood at the wrong side of the road when traffic going by, of course, and with the wait, suddenly Morton dashes across. Oh, shot straight up in the air. I put a bullet straight up in the air. He stopped dead. I said, move, and I'll put one in you. Anyway, went and got him. Now I says, are you going to behave yourself or not? I says, because if you don't behave yourself, there's no chance of you going home. I says, there might be chances when I know what time the train is. So I says, if there's a long delay, you might get to see your missus. I were only playing him up. He said, oh, no way, what if he going to go home? Well, we get into the station, into MTO's office, close the door, because I still have to stand behind that door. And I goes up to the counter. Yes, sir. I says, I'm a prisoner here. I says, and he's being awkward. I said, I want to put handcuffs on him. Oh, he says, like that, is he? Right. Two of them come round, got hold of Morton. They didn't have, come here, what do you mean by this? Oh, they didn't have to give him a fling. Got his hands handcuffed into Private Wild, so at least we've got him handcuffed. So I thought, right. And we stayed there then until the train, and they put a private carriage on, a private compartment, that sealed it off, just for us to be in that compartment. So I kept the handcuffs off, even when he went to the toilet. Are you going to? No, I says, he can stand beside you, whatever you want to do. I says, he'll be with you. So I got him back to the guard room. It was late at night when we got back. I got him back to the guard room and in the guard room, and I handed him over to the guard. He signed for him. I says, right, that's me finished. I says, do what the hell you like now, Morton. So he was kept in jail, of course. They were underneath the guard over there. So that was Morton. But however, they used to take him up to the ration tent for his breakfast, where they had the breakfast every morning. This was in Camberley. And they used to have a policeman each side of him, and one would be handcuffed to him. And he used to go for his breakfast and then parade up for his dinner, and then prayed up for his next meal, tea time. This carried on for time we were there, until one morning he's walking up with the two policemen early morning. He slipped the handcuff into the woods and away. So that was Morton again, off. The colonel was furious. Poor old Sergeant Matt, who happened to be on 48-hour leave, wasn't there. But when he come back, they stripped him of his sergeant's stripes. And I thought that was a bit harsh, because the fellow wasn't there, and he said, but the colonel said he was the main man in charge of him, and he should have made sure that he never escaped again. He said, I was determined he was going to get on that boat with us. But he says, I've left messages, he says, that when he does, they go get on him, they send him up to us. So I never saw Morton again. But whether he ever got to the battalion or not, I do not know.
But he missed the boat.
He missed the boat. He didn't get on the boat, I know that.
And just to fill in what you said off the tape, Matten was the sergeant in the regimental police. He was the provost sergeant.
He wasn't in the Red Caps.
No.
He was one of his own, but he was, they had their own police, and he was in charge of the toughing fellas what acted as policemen, they were the policemen in the...
And that was his job then?
In his battalion, you see. He's not an RTO, the RTO's with the Red Caps. He was just an ordinary sergeant, but he was in charge of all the... But he did get them back before we went into action anyway, so he did get his stripes back.
Now, Private Marston seems to have been so much trouble. Why did the battalion persist?
Why didn't he get rid of him? I don't know. He was a fit man. He was A1. He was a fit man. There's no reason why they should, I suppose. He'll probably have been a good man in action. You never know. You can't tell what your disposition is, or your sentiment, or how you're going to react. You can have it as close as you can to a battle, but until you get into a real battle, you don't know. They can take you as close as they can, like sending you to battle schools and all this sort of business, where you go under very rigorous training and firing live bullets all the time, and you're on the ground crawling and they're firing 18 inch above you. To give you that atmosphere, what it's like, they do the best. I will say that. Because all NCOs have to go to the battle school.
Could you just talk us through that then? When was that?
The battle school at Folkestone, Dover. It was between Folkestone and Dover.
When was that?
We had at least a month there.
When was that, do you think?
That was probably when we was at Rye, or before we moved to Rye. It was in that period, when we were in that area.
So it was like 41, 42.
We was in that area.
So you were...
They took the opportunity of... It was just a battle school for the NCOs, the military privates.
Would you volunteer for this, or would you be assigned to it?
No, we were assigned to do it.
So how many men were assigned, how many sergeants were assigned?
Well, there were different ones from different companies and that, you know.
So about how many of you?
Probably from different regiments. There were all kinds there. And I remember one of those officers was there. I think it was Major... Captain Balance. Captain Kirkwood, I think he was there. But there was one or two of us own officers there, but they didn't take part in what we were doing unless they were in the background giving orders, you know.
So you were assigned to this, there wasn't any choice?
No, there wasn't any choice.
And about how many sergeants from the battalion went to this?
Well, most of them got recourse on that, you see. It was only for a few weeks.
Could you describe what specific things that they taught you and how they taught you over this month?
Well, they brought you as near to what you get in action. There was an assault course and things like that. There was the lines of approach where you had to... your object was a certain hill and you had to get to it and... different lines of approach to get to it, instead of going straight up, it's round the side and up and all this sort of business, and then you have to make way over a lot of plain land and keep on your stomach all the time, you know, crawl and always be at ready with your rifle. And it was strenuous work, and then I always remember the first morning we got there, the usual thing, you don't I don't think we took his rifle the first morning. We leave the rifle at home and we formed up in front of these hills. And then he says, now what we're going to do, we're going to run up this hill. He says, and we don't stop until we get to the top. He says, admit I haven't got a pack on me. He says, I'm doing it every day. You won't be doing it every day. He says, I have to do it every day. Clever says, you follow me and I go up the hill, man. Chap. He was it up the hill like a new house. Wow. And we're all dashing to get up to the hill to get up there quickest. And it was a hell of a climb. We ran up. We kept them doing the one or two behind, chasing you on, you know. And you got to the top, flabbergasted, out of breath. And then he says, right, once the dog got up, right, we go on. And they took you on further, and oh, you went on with different things you had to do, like lines of approach and mostly field craft in general.
What did they teach you?
You was on duty from then until 6 o'clock at night. You had a break at lunch, but then you were still on duty till 6 o'clock at night. But at 6 o'clock at night, you're finished and you're free to do what you want. You could go out, you could do anything. No guard duties or anything. All that was taken care of by the personnel who were running them.
What do you think they were teaching you that you hadn't already learned? You know, you'd been a soldier for...
Well, under fire. But you're under fire all the time. They were allowed 5% casualties. So, you can imagine there was a lot of bullets, grenades and all like that thrown about.
So they were firing over the top of you?
They were firing over the top of you. They were trained not to hit anybody. We only had one casualty while I was there. And that was an officer. And one of the grenades that had been thrown hadn't gone off. And of course, the only person that was allowed is an officer and somebody to dispose of it. Well, he's in charge and he disposed of it by pressing gun cotton and blowing it up. And they got right close to this grenade and we're going to pick it up and it went up and it damaged his right arm. Flattened his right arm in the mess. And later on, after I'd been through all this, I met the same fella again in an office just outside Nottingham, the Northern Command Infantry Depot. And the same fella was still in the army, kept in the army, and he learned to write with his left hand. And he was still in the army.
And this was after you'd been wounded and came back from North Africa?
After I'd been back and got back to England again.
Now, did they have any, did they teach you anything specifically new about things like how to handle the Bren gun and the rifle, or was that...
No, we all knew how to handle.
So there was nothing new that was added to that?
The only thing new was, as I said, mostly the lines of approach, the assault course, putting you through really rigorous training. So...
Did they put you under...
They take you to the extremes.
Did they put you under artillery fire?
Artillery fire. It was mostly machine gun fire.
And there was what about?
There was no mortar fire because that could be dangerous. A mortar fire, I suppose, it was too dangerous too.
And what about kind of close quarter combat with a bayonet?
No, there were no close quarter combats at all. That would be too dangerous. You'd be injuring too many people. But they took you as near to battle situations as you could possibly get. Like when you went on these different manoeuvres, that was supposed to be as near to a battle as you'd get with your enemy, and you could fire blanks. And so you got the noise and everything, but not the actual live bullets.
What was your feelings when you were first in this training exercise bullets?
That was part of the training, and I just accepted it. I took everything into account. I just carried on and went with everything that was said and what was done. I suppose I was a good soldier, really, but I didn't think anything of it. And there was one period where Sergeant Lucas, we were training on his own, throwing hand grenades and getting behind, getting under cover. And one of the hand grenades hadn't gone off, and he thought the dog had gone off, and he popped his head up, and a piece went through his nose. But we took him into hospital in one of the carriers, and they treated him, and he was all right. It healed up, but he had a piece of shrapnel go through his nose.
So the battle school lasted for a month.
Yeah.
And was there anything else in that, in the battle school, that we haven't talked about? Any other specific?
No, that's the only thing. They took you to the extremes, if you like, as much as you could endure, running up the cliffs and dashing here and lines of approach. And
so who were the instructors? Were they?
The instructors were pretty good on the whole. They used to have a laugh about it when you got up or when you finished it all, but they were pretty strict on their instructions and everything. You still had it to do.
Well, you're assessed.
At that time, you were all fit men. You'd always had your PT training right the way through. You were always on PT so many days a week, and on a 6 o'clock in the morning till 8, something like that. So you're all fit men, you were fitter. I was as fit then as I've ever been in my life. So you could do these things. They knew how far they could take you, and they used to push you to your limits.
Were you assessed at the end of the course?
No, there wasn't. I suppose they made a report, but there was nothing.
You didn't say it.
Passed on to us whatever the stuff said.
And did everybody get through it?
Oh yes, everybody gets through it. Everybody gets through it.
How many of your fellow sergeants do you think went to the battle school?
Oh, I think 3 or 4 of them went. I'm sure they did.
But not everybody, though.
I know Sergeant Lucas did, and I can't specifically say how many went out of our lot, but I know I was one, of course, but that's as far as I recall. I know one or two had been, one or two were before me, before I went, and they come back and said what it was like.
But it wasn't something that every sergeant would have gone through?
No, it didn't everybody. They just picked certain ones, I think. I think they picked the fittest, I think, to go there, because they knew it was a very arduous course.
Now, just to sidetrack slightly, we mentioned the first colonel that you had.
Yeah.
And then in 1941, there was a change of colonel. Can you remember anything about the change, change of colonels as you
No, I don't recall much of the change of colonels. I know the first one, he was a guardsman. I know he came from himself to come up. The second one, I don't recall a lot of. We had just this major come down from the castle for this particular manoeuvre we did. The colonel was a melody. And then I don't remember any change, of course, until we got on the boat for doing. I don't remember who the colonel was when we got on the boat to Algiers.
What about the company commanders in HQ Company? Can you remember much about
company them? Commander, that was. A lot of interference with the other sections, really, because they had their own, and we were sort of like independent units, if you will.
Did you have much contact with the RSM, the Regimental Sergeant Major? Did he make his presence felt?
We used to have to go. In fact, he used to take the officers very early morning on parade, the RSM, and he was right stickler. He was the RSM.
Can you remember what he was called?
I know the second one, but I remember the first one. I don't remember his name, but he's a right stickler, and he used to take all the sergeants and NCOs as well. He'd have an hour or 2 hour session with him on parade, and everything had to be right for him, I'll tell you that.
Can you remember?
Strict RSM.
Can you remember when that? Where you were when this was going on?
Evening when we were in that area all the time.
So he was the RSM you had in 42?
The RSM in 1941,
42. And so did you have a high...
But he was a very strict RSM. He kept himself to himself. He didn't... He was still the RSM when he went in Sergeant's Mess, he was still the boss, he was the typical full-time RSM in the army, our terminus. But the one we met up later, of course, that he was mentioned quite a lot later. I knew him rather well. I knew the other one well enough, but I got to know the second RSM because he didn't go out with us, because I suppose he were too old. He was an old army, proper army, regimental sergeant major. But the one we went out with, then, of course, we didn't have the same conditions then as what we'd had in England. They were different. He's the job of supplying everybody with ammunition. That's his job. So I met him on a few occasions, and we got on very well with him. He was very good.
That was the one that went abroad with you?
That was the one that went abroad with us. His name was Cindy. That, I recall it when I come to it.
Now, during the 1942, General Montgomery took over as the general of the Southeastern Command.
Well, he was stationed in Chelsea at one time. I think when we were on Bunker Scheme, Montgomery was there. He was our lead commander. And he left us to go out there to take over the 8th Army. So that was my first connection to Montgomery. But I do know this. When we were on Bunker Scheme, and the officers always used to have the truck with the booze and everything on, he stopped that on that scheme. He says, sent it home. Hey, you'll go back, he says. They're supposed to be looking after the men here, not enjoying yourself and having the whiskies and what have you. None. He stopped that. Because he was very, he was a religious man, and I don't think he did any booze in them or that, but he'd always have cigarettes with him to hand out to the lads. He was very generous with his cigarettes.
Did you ever come face to face with him?
Yeah, well, when he was at Winchelsea and on that bumper scheme, that's when I saw him, but not to talk to him. But I did see him on that particular scheme when we were in and out of different places, and finally landing up on some of the plane. And I also remember Sergeant Battle, because we were from the suburb Battle, and that's on some of the place called Battle.
And what was Sergeant Battle like?
Oh, he was all right. He was nice.
And what did he do?
In fact, we didn't have many fallouts. The only disagreement I had with any of them was we stayed at M. Gates, and we finished up as he got very friendly.
Now,
Any more orders thrown at me after that particular one way back.
Now, when you had the sergeant's mess established, what were going on in the sergeant's mess? What was the activities?
That's all that went off. There was no entertainment or anything like that. We just went there by me and that was it.